This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. In a Mirror Darkly, Part 1. Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is my friend and co-host that I can't check off and is always there, Mr. Dave Lee. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Yannick. I'm like a bad smell that you just can't get rid of.
Exactly.
Yeah. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm very excited to be reviewing this week's episode.
Yes.
Also excited by the fact that we have our first ever returning guest. In the name of Ro. Hello, Ro. Good evening.
Good evening, everybody.
Welcome back.
Great to be back. Especially on a set of episodes, which are probably some of my favourites of Enterprise.
Very interesting episode.
To be fair, you did ask.
Yeah.
I did. I did ask to be here for these, these ones, and, for sure.
And we are glad to have you back, yes.
Thank you very much.
So today we're going to review Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 18, In a Mirror Darkly, Part 1. After that, we're going to have a chat with Ro, probably about the episode or anything that comes to mind, because we already have asked our quickfire questions. And I haven't updated the webpage yet, so I will do that soon. And, well, I guess we should start the review of this week's episode.
Make it so.
So, in the teaser, it's April 5, 2063. From beyond Earth's atmosphere, a Vulcan ship descends and lands on Bozeman, Montana. Watched by a crowd of onlookers, a member of the Vulcan crew disembarks and approaches Zefram Cochrane. The alien performs a Vulcan salute and recites a Vulcan citation: "Live long and prosper." Cochrane tries to imitate the newcomer's salute. After an unsuccessful attempt, he lowers his hand and, instead of holding it for a handshake, he reaches into his coat and pulls out a shotgun, with which he shoots the Vulcan, who instantly collapses. A bearded man in the crowd tells the other human spectators to board the alien ship and take everything they can. Surprise, surprise!
The brilliant James Cromwell there.
Absolutely.
And if you watch carefully, the whole bit of Cromwell doing his hands and things like that is taken directly off First Contact, of course.
Yeah.
But as soon as the hand goes down, you'd never see his face again, and you see the gun come out and shoot him. And it's somebody else in the audience, in the crowd, that shouts, "Board the ship, let's take everything we can." So it's very, very well cut together. It's so unnervingly well stitched. I mean, you look at the parallels between the two, you would hardly know there's any difference.
Yeah, yeah.
When I watched it and I realized what it was we were about to see, now bearing in mind I've not seen this episode before, I only know that it was a Mirror Universe episode because I had been told previously. So I was wondering to myself, I wonder if James Cromwell's going to be doing the part of Zefram Cochrane. And there he was. And I'm like, wow, how did they get him to do that? Doesn't he look young? And of course, it wasn't. It was directly out of First Contact.
Yeah. They took the scene from the Vulcan arrival on Earth, yeah.
It's also worth pointing out that I think that if somebody had watched this episode for the first time, not knowing that it was part of a Mirror Universe episode, I think they might have been... Well, I suppose it depends on whether they're aware of the First Contact storyline or not, as to how they would have reacted to this.
Yeah.
I saw this on television for the first time. I didn't, you know, it was on video I first saw this, because it wasn't broadcast on British television until well later. And I thought this opening scene where they shoot the Vulcan, I just thought, my word, what the hell? And then it rolls into the opening credits. And of course, they're all very, very different and dark and horrid with bombs and explosions and everything else. I thought, what the hell is happening here? You know, I didn't even think for 1 minute that it was a mirror episode, because you don't know the name of it until the opening of Act One, do you? Mm. So when I saw this for the first time, I thought, what the hell? Really? You know, have they decided to go completely off kilter or something? And they thought, no, this Enterprise thing isn't working. We're going to just do something else. And I thought, wow, yeah, brilliant.
Well, one thing they did, they should have done much earlier and keep after that, is the music of the opening sequence.
Yeah, see, I would have thought season one, episode one, they should have started doing that.
Yeah, they should have started with that and stick with it.
It was a brilliant opening sequence, because it was all Terran based. Yeah. It was much different, a lot less homely than the usual opening credits. But the theme tune, which was a lot more military in style, certainly compared to the abomination that we've been subjected to so far, I actually really liked the theme tune. This could certainly be something they should have started with at the beginning. And in fact, it even sounded more Star Trek, but it couldn't have sounded less.
I get you really. There. Yeah.
Yeah,
it could have sounded a good really song for those episodes.
Yeah. We should try and get the music and put the usual images on top of that, see how it goes.
Ooh, challenge accepted.
Well, if we do that, we'll maybe put a link in the show notes, although we might break a few copyright laws by doing that.
Oh, I'm sure somebody's done it already, you know.
Yeah, probably. So after this really cool opening sequence, we are now into Act 1, and we are aboard the ISS Enterprise, with Reed and Phlox demonstrating their new invention, an agony booth, to Captain Forrest and First Officer Jonathan Archer. The observers discuss attributes of certain torture methods, after what Captain Forrest exits, followed by Archer. So yeah, Phlox seemed to enjoy what he was doing.
Yes. He's certainly a sadist in this episode, I think, isn't he?
And you can for sure see it in his eyes.
And it's vicious.
Yeah. It's this first scene, I mean, of course it's different from the rest of Enterprise, but I mean, as soon as that starts, I there was no question. It was a Star Trek episode, and I accepted all the changes. And it was it was very well done. Even though it was just the first scene, but it just put the characters in situation really quickly. So we now know that Phlox is a sadist. That Archer is probably going to do something because he's not the captain. But you can see that he's not very he's not ready to give up command or things stuff like that. So yeah, very very interesting and very well done opening first scene.
Definitely, the agony chamber was very very reminiscent of the tube they had in the laboratory on Cold Station 12, and I wonder whether they were meant to be the same thing.
They probably just recycled the props,
using the same props. I'm sure of it. Yeah.
So you don't think they were actually intended to be the same device?
I wouldn't go that far anyway, without any proof
or
piece of evidence. But yeah, I just think they're recycled the props.
Am I right in thinking there is only one mirror universe?
Yes.
So far.
There is only one mirror universe.
So the Terran Empire in Enterprise is the same Terran Empire as we saw in Discovery.
Yes,
and in the original series, and in Deep Space Nine, and in Next Gen.
All of which I haven't got to yet.
There is no mirror episode in Next Gen.
There is no?
Nope, not a single episode.
That's what I asked last week. I was not sure, or the week before, I don't know.
No, there are no mirror episodes in Next Gen.
Okay.
Mirror Mirror was original series, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
There was quite a few episodes with the Mirror Universe in the original series.
No. Only the
just one.
Yeah. Because it was a transporter accident there with an ion storm.
But the Defiant we see in this episode, it was in
yes.
The 30th.
It is. The Defiant is in the original series, and I know all the details about that, so I'll tell you about
that. They didn't go. Yeah, okay. We'll see that after that. Okay. So in a corridor, Archer reminds the captain of a proposal he made to venture into Tholian space to retrieve a technology that would give the Terran Empire the upper hand against a rebellion. However, Forrest wants to help the Empire's assault fleet annihilate the rebels, as ordered by Starfleet. Although Forrest suspects that Archer wants to use the technology to attain personal glory, the First Officer repudiates this. Archer's insistence on his plan influences Forrest to threaten the First Officer with a place in the Agony Booth. Archer finally yields to Forrest's authority. It's not easy to say Forrest's.
Certainly a huge hierarchy in this now. Everybody's not particularly treated equally.
Yeah.
And you can certainly see that it's a militaristic environment these people are living in, not in an exploration environment like the original universe. So, yes, they've all gone through military training and all this kind of thing. And, you can see that come through right there.
Mm-hmm. Forrest is later busily reviewing work in his quarters when Oshi, the captain's woman, approaches eager to relax him. Oshi remarks that she's likely the only person on board who doesn't want to kill him. Relaying rumor that a recent battle with the rebellion at Toh Ceti went well, Oshi plans that, once the war is over, she will return to teaching students in Brazil, while Forrest will accept a desk job at Starfleet headquarters. He, however, explained that the battle was much worse than she has heard. Forrest implies that he is hiding the truth from the rest of the crew. Oshi advises him to forget about the war and goes back to passionately kissing him. So yeah, if she's the only one who doesn't want to kill him, but I don't know if she wouldn't... She wouldn't actually do it, because in this universe, everybody seems to be willing to kill anyone just to, if they could, you know, get something out of it. So.
Just to get one up on them or move up a rank. I mean, yeah. It's the way that they get to move up ranks and things like that is very similar to Klingon culture, of course. You know, if somebody does something wrong, like a lieutenant or something like that, then that lieutenant can be challenged in Klingon lore to then go up a rank. I think it's very, very similar here.
Yeah.
It's not been taken from Klingons, I don't think, because I don't think at this time Klingons are a big involvement in the Mirror Universe. So, yeah, I don't think, to be honest, with everything else I've sort of read and hypothesized about the Mirror Universe, you know, Klingons aren't involved in the Rebels or anything like that yet. So, yeah, there are definitely parallels with Klingon culture to this. Yeah, it's interesting to see.
Yeah. The Mirror Universe as a whole, kind of struggling with the concept here, because whilst I can appreciate that there is a parallel universe, or specifically a Mirror Universe, where most of the elements that exist in the Prime Universe also exist in the Mirror one, I think I'm having a trouble wrapping my head around the fact that everything is almost identical.
Yeah.
So we've started up, you know, we've found out that even in the Mirror Universe, Hoshi was teaching students in Brazil as she was in the Prime Universe. So yeah. What are the odds that all the circumstances that followed her through the entirety of her career thus far has ended her up on Enterprise with the majority of her prime counterparts?
True.
Just the fact that the ship has the same shape and it's called Enterprise, I mean, it's really thin. Mm. And the fact that they interact with the prime universe, and then you go 5, 10, 20 years later, and it's still in sync.
Yep.
You see here, this is only 100 years after Zefram Cochrane killed the first Vulcan on Earth. I mean, so there could be a number of similarities in the way that they've developed flight and the ship from Zefram Cochrane's original design and things like that. So that's not completely out of the realm of possibility.
I guess, yeah.
But when it comes to the crew and things like that, and the war has been ongoing for a number of years, it's surprising that the crew is very similar. You'd think that there would be more military. I mean, I know that Mayweather and Reed are Makos in this,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just, you know, security members and things like that of the crew. They are actual Makos. But yeah, that's the only thing that I can think does jar a little bit, is that why would they have necessarily even aliens like Phlox?
Yeah.
It's the only one we've seen so far, of course, being on one of the flagships of the Enterprise when it's a Terran Empire.
You could imagine, and we're going to go philosophical and you know, just out there for a moment, that there's really one way forward for the universe, you know, and Cochrane killing the first Vulcan is just a glitch, and then the mirror universe tends to, you know, come back to the prime universe, and then they keep changing just little things.
Just little things cross over like this.
Yeah. Yeah. So that could be one explanation. That, you know, it's just completely out there, but
cosmic timeline doesn't change. It's just the timeline of individuals and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Yeah.
So this is going to be my question, because I originally thought that the teaser was just there to introduce a different storyline of what could have happened in a different parallel universe. Mm. But actually the suggestion here that it was how Zefram Cochrane responded to first contact that effectively precipitated this change of events that led to the Empire, that led to effectively what we're seeing now. Is that what we're suggesting?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't pick that up on when I watched the episode. I just thought it was an indication that this wasn't what it seemed to be.
Yeah, I think that's that. What we saw was what happened in the Mirror Universe. In the Mirror Universe, Cochrane killed the first Vulcan, while in the Prime Universe, he didn't.
Right. Yeah, and I get that. And this is the approach that I took, in that, or what we're seeing is two different sides of the same timeline or equivalent timelines.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where Rose going with this is that what we're seeing now in 2155 is a direct result of what happened in 2063.
No.
No?
No, no, no. No. If you look at the intro, you've got all that war and conflict and things like that. Yeah, but you've got people landing on the moon and putting down the Imperial flag, which suggests that Earth is already going through this transitional phase of being militaristic and things like that. Then there was this big, huge world war, which then wiped everybody out, but still a core, ethic of being militaristic, which then stemmed onto them killing the first Vulcan, and then so forth and so on.
Right. So my original thought was correct then.
I don't think there ever was an event in the Prime Universe that gave birth to the Mirror Universe. the mirror universe was always there, like ours were.
I would presume that it might have been probably the Second World War or something like that. That probably would have split to then have the mirror universe, possibly the Nazis or something like that, won, and then sort of like the Terran Empire started from that.
Possibly.
It's certainly before the 60s, because it was 69 when, of course, the first moon landing. And, of course, you have the flag. So that does suggest that it's post-Second World War.
Okay.
Just post-Second World War that the mirror universe kind of started. That's my thought, anyway.
Yeah, that's good. We all have different thoughts, and so we can have discussions at length. It's going to be a good subject for Christmas dinner. So, what do you think about the mirror universe?
Chomp, chomp, chomp.
I bet they've got better turkey than this.
Oh, but do they have Brussels sprouts in the mirror universe?
Maybe not.
As a torture device, maybe.
Maybe. As Enterprise warps through space, Forrest is making his way through the ship, closely followed by a Mako, when they are ambushed by Archer and some Makos allied with him, including Reed and Mayweather. Despite Archer ordering Reed to lock Forrest in the brig, the Major is intent on killing the imprisoned captain. Archer threateningly insists that Forrest be kept alive, so Reed ultimately relents. But it was a bit easy, that mutiny and how they subdued the captain. I mean, in a universe like that, I would have thought the captain would, you know, be walking with more than just one Mako with him.
Yeah, I would have thought that there would have been a couple, but, you know, I guess maybe that, you know, the hierarchy of that ship had been established for quite some time.
Yeah.
And there wasn't that much of a conflict between the officers. I think all of this stems on to what Archer wants to do rather than... if that wasn't there, I don't think Archer would have actually challenged the captain.
Good point.
I'm not a huge fan of the new characters. Malcolm's become quite nasty, quite calculating. Yeah. He's certainly not the mild and meek person that he presents himself as in the Prime Universe. But I'm at this point in watching the episode, I'm still struggling to get my head around. Exactly. Not what's going on. I kind of get what's going on, but I'm struggling to align the characters and the way they're behaving to everything that I've seen up to this point.
Yeah. As I said last week, I usually don't like when writers make the characters do stuff that we're not used to. But as I said, in the first scene, you can establish that it's not the character that we're used to. So I didn't have any trouble accepting those new behaviors from them. And also, I've watched many other episodes from the Mirror Universe, so I kind of knew what I was getting into. And didn't strike me as odd.
Fair enough.
Tipol is sitting in the bridge's command chair when Archer and his Makos arrive. Archer seizes control of the bridge and, via shipwide communication that is heard by Hoshi, Phlox, and the disfigured chief engineer Charles Tucker, he assumes command of the rest of the ship, claiming that Starfleet ordered not only his takeover, but also that he directs the ship on a vital, secretive mission into Tholian space. He assures the crew that if their mission is successful, Starfleet will crush the rebellion once and for all. He oversees the ship's change of course and orders Tipol to help with the installation of a stored Suliban cloaking device, as it will be necessary to the mission.
But I do like the new Tipol.
Yeah, there must be a problem with the industry in this universe, because they ran out of fabric to make the women's uniform.
yes. Clearly the budget ran out or something.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they needed the extra fabric for something else. I don't know.
There is a really unnerving 3 seconds of cut to when Archer is doing his announcement over the Tannoy, and that is Phlox again. He's in his laboratory cutting up small animals, right? Which are still alive and moving. If you actually look at that in HD, you'll see them twitching, which is really scary. I mean, it does remind me of World War II medical, you know, doctors doing vivisection and things like that. And even some of the, even today, you know, the actual documents and the artwork and the anatomy that these people did during these two world wars are still used today because they are so detailed and so breakthrough, you know, that they broke through an awful lot of medicine during the Second World War. And that scene kind of just triggers all that in my head, sort of, yes, he is cutting up these, dissecting small animals, which, you know, everybody says is a sign of a psychopath. But yeah, it is unnerving because, I mean, when I first saw it, I didn't actually notice. I noticed the animals there, but watching it in HD and seeing them still twitching and moving is a bit really unnerving.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another small animal later in the episode.
There is as well,
You'll see.
Yeah, he seems to be always busy you know, doing that kind of stuff. You do see Tucker in that scene as well with a big scar down the side of his face, which is, you know, you always kind of, you wonder at this point, how the hell did he get that?
Well, we were actually wondering last week or the week before how the heck he didn't get any in the Prime Universe. You know, he's always close to the engine and there's explosions and radiations and stuff like that.
But, true.
Yeah.
True.
In the captain's ready room, Tipol reluctantly accepts that Archer is in command. He shows her Zefran Cochrane's shotgun from a century prior, wondering what might have happened if Cochrane had not used it to kill the first Vulcan who set foot on Earth. Tipol then lets Archer know that they have likely entered Tholian-occupied space. Archer assigns her to search for a particular warp signature and, just as she is about to leave, he calls her back in with news that he is promoting her to first officer. Finally dismissed by Archer, Tipol exits. Yeah, she was... He said that if the Cochrane wouldn't have killed the first Vulcan, humans would have been slaves. And Tipol replies that she's not... she protests that she's not a slave. And then he answers, "Your Vulcan, always remember that." As in, you know, it's a lower species.
Yeah, I think it's always felt that non-Terrans are considered subordinates in this. Even in the opening scene where they're torturing the Tellarite.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of like say, "Oh, well, what did, what's his name do?" He says, "Well, I'm not entirely sure. Probably late for his shift." You know, that kind of thing. And so, it is a bit of a terse comment for him to say. But yeah, I think over 100 years, Terrans believe that they are the superior. So, yeah, it's part of the Terran ethos that they are more superior than anybody else they meet.
Well, to be fair, they have expanded in the universe. So they're probably as strong as a people. So that with that comes the idea that they might be superior, which is probably completely wrong. But
well, you did say in this scene that if it wasn't for Vulcans, they wouldn't be the empire they are now.
Yeah.
Which, yes, you certainly see later on, you know, the technology being used on the Enterprise that isn't in the Prime Universe, which suggests that, yes, they took it and adapted it and used it for their own will.
How did Reed become the next in command? How would he have been the next one likely to be first officer when he was actually in a different service? So Reed was a Mako, which means he would have been military, whereas T'Pol was in a fleet ranking system.
Yeah. It's like the that they probably are all military, but yeah. The Makos are more like Marines kind of thing. They're sort of like a special group, aren't they? They're a special military outfit.
Space Marines.
Because if you look at the ranking on Memory Alpha, assuming that they follow the same trail, the role of commander, which is what T'Pol is, doesn't exist in the military. The role of major, which Reed is, doesn't exist in fleet. So I don't understand how Reed and T'Pol could actually be within the same chain of command.
They're still in the chain of command with Archer being the captain. So I would presume that it would be, with the bodyguards, and we'll come to this in a minute when Archer talks to Mayweather about him being the bodyguard. I kind of half expect Reed to be Archer. Mayweather and Archer probably were... Mayweather and Reed were probably grunts for Archer and his decision to make Mayweather his bodyguard, second in command, mm-hmm. would kind of make him second. It's a little confusing because, you don't know what Mayweather... Is Mayweather a lieutenant?
Sergeant.
He's a sergeant. Yeah. So... You got sergeant, of course, is lower than major. So if there was some kind of hierarchy, it would be Archer, Reed, then Mayweather.
Although amusingly, in military rank, major outranks captain.
Hmm. Yes, it does.
Yes, but we already established that.
Yes,
captain is just captain of the ship. It could be an admiral. Or
no, exactly, anything. Exactly. Yeah. Because even though he's claiming captaincy of the ship, he's still only a commander.
Yeah.
When you take over any ship, you become the captain of it.
Yeah.
No matter what rank you are, I believe.
Later, Archer personally promotes Sergeant Mayweather to acting as the captain's personal guard. Mayweather starts to congratulate Archer on his successful mutiny, but the newly appointed captain cuts him short, followed by snarls from a hungry Porthos. Which was not the Porthos we used to.
I love the new Porthos.
Yeah.
The Rottweiler Porthos.
The Rottweiler. Yeah, exactly. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant outfit. Such a little throwaway thing, and it's just, oh.
This Porthos could easily eat the other Porthos
for
breakfast. Yeah. Hoshi arrives and admits that she knows Archer didn't receive orders from Starfleet. He shows her an image of the brig on his desktop monitor and says the former captain will stay alive as long as Hoshi cooperates. Although she seduces Archer into accepting her continuance as the captain's woman, she pulls a knife out while they kiss. He disarms her, just as T'Pol helps him. The Vulcan reports that Enterprise is approaching the thought-after warp signature.
T'Pol's always good at...
Yeah.
Good at interrupting things. Last week was the Orion girl kiss. And
yeah, you know, almost the same situation.
It's Hoshi trying to stab him to death.
Yeah. Well, I did see this one coming from miles away.
Yeah, he was very quick to react to it. He must have been expecting it.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Because he went for the knife before she'd actually cleared it from where she had it. Upper back.
Yeah. Well, you can't organize a mutiny and don't expect someone to come and stab you in the back.
Yeah, literally.
True, but it looks like Hoshi and Archer had a relationship as well before
they went onto
the Enterprise. So we don't know what happened there.
No, but...
we did a bit later.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's one for you then. I picked up on something and it didn't make sense, so I checked it up and actually it's wrong. Hoshi appears to have green piping on her uniform. Green is not a colour in either the Prime or Mirror universe for Enterprise personnel.
So where did that come from then?
Is it really green or is it just kind of yellow with the...
No, I checked. It would have been closer to a blue than a yellow, but it was definitely green.
Maybe she is both yellow and blue, so it makes green. But blue is not a color. Oh, yes, blue is a color.
Blue is a color. Yeah, absolutely.
But green is science, isn't it?
Green is not.
No, but yellow is and blue is. So let's say she's.
But that
both
would make her a commander scientist, or whatever the other thing. Yellow means two things, doesn't it? The command and
yellow is engineering, isn't it?
Yeah. In Next Gen, it is. I don't know if it is. Is it? Yeah, on Enterprise? While Devs checks on Memory Alpha, Enterprise drops out of warp, nearing its target, a Tholian ship manned by a single Tholian. Following a failed plan to tractor onto the enemy craft and a subsequent brief exchange of firepower, Enterprise disables the Tholian ship. Its pilot starts an overload in its reactor, but is beamed into Enterprise's decon chamber just as its own ship explodes. Acting on orders from Archer, Phlox delightedly begins to torture the Tholian by modifying the chamber's atmosphere.
Delightedly?
Yeah, delightedly.
It's wrong.
There's two things to this scene. They try to tractor emitter the ship. And, of course, tractor emitters were not on the Enterprise in Prime. Mm. That was a technology they would have taken from Vulcans. And there's also shields as well on the Enterprise.
Yeah, that's true.
Which they didn't have in Prime either. So, yeah, they're certainly taking technologies from other races and adapting it to themselves.
Only hull-plating in Prime.
Didn't spot either of those two.
Yeah. And the environment for the Tholian, 480 degrees Kelvin.
Yeah. I
was looking this up. So Kelvin is 206.9 degrees Celsius or 402 degrees Fahrenheit. Kelvin, or absolute zero, zero Kelvin is absolute zero.
Yeah.
Which is minus 273.
Minus 273. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was rather interesting that they're using Kelvin in this and not centigrade and Fahrenheit, because you've discussed this in previous shows about it.
It's not that hot. It works out at 480
Kelvin is 206.9 degrees centigrade.
But that's like a moderate oven.
For a creature to live in that temperature for an extended length of time.
Yeah, but when they say it as 480 Kelvin, that seems a lot hotter than 206.9 degrees centigrade.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't measure things by Kelvin, do they? They measure things by centigrade. So saying 400 degrees Kelvin, people are going to quickly think, ooh, that's very hot.
Yes.
It's still very hot.
Although we don't talk about Kelvin, do we?
We don't talk about this temperature.
But again, Phlox grinning, relishing on doing this to the creature because they're trying to. No, they're not torturing the creature yet, are they? They're
Well, he started to. Because he started to drop the temperature slightly, didn't he? The end of this act.
In the next scene,
Oh, was it the next scene? Okay.
The next scene, I think it is. He's playing with it. But
it's what we saw 2 weeks ago in Divergence is almost the exact opposite of what we're seeing of Phlox now, where Phlox wasn't happy to step on an ant in the Prime Universe. And yet here, he'd happily drop a nuclear bomb on it.
This is ethics, isn't it? This is the whole
thing.
There
are no ethics here.
There are no ethics here.
He's more aligned here to a Klingon in the Prime Universe than he is anything else.
Yeah.
It's not Phlox. It really isn't. Don't like this Phlox.
Well, it's not Phlox. It's Phlox from the Mirror Universe.
Precisely, Mirror
Phlox.
Mirror Phlox, negative flux. So, Act 2. The senior staff gather outside the Deacon Chamber. Archer is interested to know where the Tholians have taken the Terran vessel they captured. Phlox tortures the prisoner until it admits that Archer's quarry is at an orbital facility in the Vintak system. The Tholian then starts using its own crystalline structure to transmit a distress signal. Archer lets his signal officer know that he would prefer to keep the alien alive, but unconscious, until its information is confirmed. So yeah, that's in this incident that Phlox reduces the temperature of the Deacon Chamber, and the Tholian starts to suffer a lot, and Phlox once again enjoys what he's doing.
Yes. So this scene has my quote of the week.
Yeah.
So when Hoshi, who still seems to be acting in a linguistic capacity in the Mirror Universe, you know where this is going. She's translating the Tholian screeches, and she translates it as something about your maternal ancestor.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah, spot on.
I think we can all figure out what she said.
Yes, I mean they got away with that one so nicely.
Yeah. Working with Tipol on installing the cloak in engineering, Tucker sees to it that she has a radiation meter from engineering officer Biggs, as it will prevent her from absorbing the same kind of delta rays that disfigured him. Discussion turns, much to Tipol's discomfort, to a past experience wherein Tucker allowed her to relieve Ponfar with him. An electrical overload sparking to the cloaking device electrocutes Tucker. Yeah, so she didn't seem to want to remember this experience, Tucker? Tipol.
Certainly, with the radiation meter and things like that, makes me think that technical progress. They're taking the technology from others, not quite understanding how it all works, getting it working without having all the safety things in place. You know, they're putting all this stuff into Enterprise, like. It's probably a Warp 6 engine or something like that at this point. And, of course, it's not quite a devil-may-care idea to engineering and technology, but it's certainly, you know, they're not ensuring crew safety in this kind of thing.
Yeah, I can see that, this episode, in this universe, the life of the red shirts are even less important than in Prime Universe. I mean, at least they care in Prime Universe. They don't seem to care a lot about their red shirts in this universe. Archer and Reed later inquire into the incident. The captain is insistent that Tucker prioritize the cloak's repair. Reed is suspicious of the overload, and Tucker objects to Reed's Mako's investigating. It was funny how he said, yeah, they're going to switch relays and move cables, and he didn't want them to do that.
That certainly seems that there's not really very much cooperation between people and teams in this universe. Yeah. Everybody's got a fixed purpose and orders or whatever it might be. And so there's an element of distrust between engineering and security and things like that. Yeah. There's no sort of let's work it out together and, you know, solve a problem. You know, there's always sort of this kind of blame culture in here as well, which is rather interesting.
Well, it seems to me that it might be between the military branch and the crew branch that they don't go along with each other.
We saw that in season 3 as well in the Prime Universe, so it doesn't surprise me that this is the same in Mirror. Yeah.
It reminds me of Stargate Universe, where there's a team of military and a team of civilian that they have to live together, and they're really two different set of minds, you know, so they don't go along very well with each other. And to me, it's like that on this Enterprise, where the civilians, well, even though they're probably a little bit military too, but the civilians don't go along with the military.
I think part of the difference there is that we're in the Prime Universe, the military staff are actually under the command of a ship officer. Whereas here, it seems as though the military branch are actually completely separate. I couldn't even begin to see who is actually commanding the military branch in the Mirror Universe. I would presume that on ship, it would be Reed.
Yeah, I think it's Reed.
And yet on Enterprise in the Prime Universe, okay, it's still Reed. But he's Starfleet. He's not military.
Yeah, there's a senior official for the Makos, I think, in Prime.
There was.
Yeah, we don't see him a lot.
No, he died in season 3.
He probably was replaced by someone.
I can picture the actor because I've seen him in other things.
Effectively, the command is Archer, is the commanding officer of the ship, so he commands the Makos.
There's no Makos in season 4.
Yeah, there are.
In crew.
Well, we saw one last week.
Yeah, there are Makos in the ship, yeah. But as far as I'm aware, as with the Expanse, they report initially, certainly, into Malcolm.
In the brig, Archer demands that Forrest identify the saboteur, believing it was a spy assigned by Admiral Black. But Forrest claims ignorance. Archer orders Mayweather to search the captain's quarter for telltale messages from Starfleet. Now alone with Archer, Forrest criticizes him of having always lacked ambition. Archer brutalizes Forrest, citing his imprisonment as a sign that he is incorrect. Forrest pleads for Archer to release him, claiming consequences of both freeing him and killing him. Archer throws him against a bulkhead and departs.
Forrest knows there's been a relationship between Archer and Hoshi here, isn't there? And so, you know, that's leverage, you know, sort of for Forrest to stay alive.
Yeah.
Which is quite evident in this scene. Again, it looks like there's only two cells here, which I would have thought there probably should have been more on a battleship rather than, you know, just two little cells.
Unless they resort to Klingons ways and execute anyone that bothers them.
We're following the same chronological timeline as we have done throughout the whole of season 4. But you'll remember that it was either 2 or 3 weeks ago we commented that the brig had been divided into two, specifically to house Malcolm and the other chap beginning with M, the Klingon with no ridges.
Yeah.
So if we're saying that the events that happen in the two universes run in parallel, then it's likely then that the brig on the ISS Enterprise was divided into two about 3 weeks ago.
Except it's a military ship, and as Rose said, they probably should have more brigs than that.
You would think so.
Especially if you know, it's a custom to mount a mutiny and try to kill superior officers.
If it was a military ship, as in a combat ship, then I would have expected the external configuration of the ship to be distinctly different from that of the USS Enterprise.
It is. It has yellow...
It's got yellow flashes on it. That's about it. There doesn't seem to be any extra weaponry. There doesn't seem to be any, you know, augmented armoury or anything like that on the ship at all.
There are shields. There are shields.
Which they stole.
Shields. Yeah, phasers. There's phasers because they shot at the Tholian ship. Tractor emitters. Those are kind of things which you might not necessarily see any external change as such, really. Yeah.
But other than that, the ISS Enterprise doesn't look like a battleship. Doesn't look like a combat ship. It looks like a research vessel in the same way that the Prime Enterprise does.
That's one of the oddities of the Mirror Universe.
Well, one of many.
Yeah.
I think if I remember my Enterprise D technical manual, The actual configuration of where the nacelles need to be in conjunction to the rest of the ship is really important. So maybe it's just a quirk that in the Mirror Universe it's the same kind of configuration as in Prime, because that is the way that it has to be to get the speed that they need to.
Yeah, it's possible.
And if you've got an extra gun turret sticking out the front of it, it sort of screws up the calculations.
With a Mako hanging off it.
You know, it does a drag, and then you lose one or two warp factor. Mm. Go slower in the corners.
You just expand the warp field to accommodate.
In the Bridges Situation Room, Reed explains to Archer that evidence points to Tucker as being the saboteur. Tucker is later punished in the agony booth. Through severe pain, Tucker claims he is innocent and threatens Reed for having implicated him, but Reed merely teases Tucker in return. Archer suspects Tucker is Admiral Black's spy, and, despite Tucker insisting to the contrary, a distrusting Archer directs Reed to continue subjecting Tucker to the agony booth.
Break him.
Yeah. Very not enjoyable.
It's certainly not the Archer that we know and love, is it? I mean, it's certainly somebody, even in that scene, you can see that his captaincy, his power that he has over the rest of the crew has already started to turn him a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's becoming a bit more brutal in his behaviour.
Later in the captain's quarter, Archer and Hoshi lie together, clearly having had sexual intercourse. The captain shows that Hoshi transmitted data to the fleet admiral, but only refers to it, cryptically, as an insurance policy. Archer then starts to suspect Tipple of being the saboteur, finding that she cannot be located by the ship's computer, as the overload damaged the internal sensors. Did you notice that the voice of the computer is a male?
I did. Yeah, spotted that one straight away.
I mean, we're used to Majel Barrett doing all the computer voice of the Enterprise, so...
That's another thing as well.
Yeah.
The computer on Prime doesn't have a voice.
No, not in... Something else they stole from
someone else.
Mm.
Yeah. Tipol, meanwhile, leads a successful rescue effort to free Forrest from the brig, two Vulcan's companions of hers having a brief encounter with Archer, who escapes in a turbolift. Forrest and Tipol then retake command from the bridge, but find that the ship is locked on course, which Archer personally confirms before sarcastically relinquishing command to Forrest. Yeah, so he locked the coordinate using a randomly generated code that he doesn't even know.
Tapped into a keyboard randomly with his eyes shut. Yeah. That's probably how he did that.
Nope, I don't know. Yeah, we'll pass on this. Right, so act three now of this episode. With Archer having spent 10 hours in the agony booth, Phlox remarks to Captain Forrest that he is amazed by Archer's pain threshold. The captain is reluctantly forced to release Archer from the booth. Forrest not only wishes to instead use it on Major Reed, but also privately informs Archer that Fleet Admiral Gardner has ordered his release, having been intrigued by the data Archer sent via Hoshi. A seething Forrest lets Archer know that his betrayal is unforgivable, and notifies Archer that he is due to brief the senior staff in an hour. So, take him out of the booth and then send him in a meeting.
10 hours, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
10 hours. Wow.
I mean, we find out later that Tucker did 4 hours in the booth, and we do not know how long the Tellarite lasted in there. But yes, it's certainly. Well, 10 hours in the booth, you'd kind of think that you would probably have had enough after 3 or 4, and you would just sort of shut down or pass out or die.
Well, that's what they explain in the first scene, that this booth doesn't use the same brain area, so that your brain can't just shut down in one part of the sensory...
Because it keeps changing the way that it manipulates.
Yeah, good point.
While Enterprise continues at warp speed, the senior staff are gathered in the briefing room. Archer is briefing the senior staff, explaining that after managing to open an interphasic rift into a parallel universe, the Tholians intentionally lured a ship through from the other side. Archer shows the other officers some images of the captured ship. The assembled crew members muse over the significance of the craft, which Archer says is not only from another universe, but also from about 100 years into the future. Tipol strongly objects to the information, fearing it is a trap and reminding Forrest of Archer's crimes. But Forrest insultingly interrupts her, adamant that they will investigate the ship, and instructs Tucker to get the clock working.
Yeah, so this is the link between this episode and the original series episode, the Tholian Web.
Yeah.
In TOS, the original series, they say interspatially linked, interspatially trapped. So I guess that's the same, interphasic and interspatially. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's where this new ship has come from. And yes, we'll find out the name of that ship shortly.
Yeah, and also this story and this ship is referenced in Discovery in season 1, episode 10, Despite Yourself, when in the Discovery series they're in the Mirror Universe and they figure out that there was a ship from the Prime Universe that came in the Mirror Universe. So now they're looking for a way to go back and they're tracked what happened to the ship that we don't know the name yet. While working on the clock in engineering, Tucker becomes distracted by Tipol's presence and vents his anger at her for having apparently falsified the evidence that incriminated him earlier. She explains that she seduced him away from engineering before motivating him, by way of a mind meld, to sabotage the clock himself, before using another meld to alter his memory of what had happened. She states that she was duty-bound to help Forrest regain command. Tucker calls the bridge and reports that the clock is ready, so Forrest orders for it to be engaged. The ship encounters light energy fluctuations at first, but then clocks.
It's really interesting, this bit between T'Pol and Tucker about her using a mind meld to convince him to do this. And it reminds me about, well, the episode that I was last on in T.L. Grey Hot about the Cyrenites and the way that they might have used telepathy during those Vulcan wars. Now, even though, you know, Surak would have been teaching and there would have been this pacifistic age, when this mirror universe came into effect and the Vulcans were killed when they landed and ultimately invaded by the Terran Empire and defeated, which seems like the case, the Vulcans would probably use every means that they would have to them. And there's certainly evidence in this episode that T'Pol is quite emotional, more emotional than she was in the Prime Universe, and using telepathic powers to manipulate and control people would certainly be something in their arsenal that they would use to combat against aggressors.
Yeah.
So you think about what happened in that 3-part Vulcan episode where they were starting to study the Cyrenite, Cyrax's teachings and things like that. None of that would be happening in this kind of thing. So it's an interesting thought of how almost militaristic or rebellious that Vulcans could possibly get in this universe. So yeah, for her to use a mind meld to control Tucker to sabotage something seems very feasible.
And another great difference from Prime. First, using mind meld, which is she doesn't in Prime, and using it for personal benefits, actually. So it's not at all the T'Pol we're used to.
No.
Soon thereafter, T'Pol is at the bridge's science station when Enterprise reaches its destination in proximity of a gas giant in the Vintax system. The bridge officers spot the captured ship in a dry dock built into a moon of the gas giant. The vessel is the Constitution-class Federation starship USS Defiant.
Defiant!
Yay! So not the Defiant of Deep Space Nine, but...
No. No, but of course the one in Deep Space Nine is the kind of namesake, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, the same Defiant as the one in the Tholian Web from TOS. And actually, it looked exactly like something that could have been in the original series. It has the same design and...
Very similar design to 1701.
Yeah, well, they're saying Constitution.
It's a Constitution.
Class,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, Act 4. T'Pol briefs Archer, Tucker, Reed, and Forrest in the Situation Room, telling them that the Defiance system, even that of life support, are powered down. Those alive aboard the Defiant consist of 13 non-humans, including one reptilian. Although Tucker is impressed by the vessel's engineering capabilities, Forrest plans for Archer to lead an assault team to salvage as much as possible from the craft's databank before destroying it. Archer objects to this plan, but Forrest shuts him down. Moments after the others leave, Forrest instructs T'Pol to join the assault team, conspiratorially implying that he wants her to ensure Archer dies during the mission.
Now, I can't help thinking that had Forrest given that command to T'Pol at the beginning of Season 1, she may well have complied.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wearing environmental suits, the team, now including Sergeant Mayweather, beam into a corridor of the Defiant to find that the Tholians have been gutting the vessel. The team also come across a dead human security officer lying beside a discarded phaser. Reed offers to hold the weapon, but Archer takes it instead. That was funny how he said that. I can hold that for you, sir. As if he was, you know, the butler.
Yes. I want it. Give it to me.
It's mine. Mine. My precious.
Surprising. They beamed over. I mean, yes, we know that teleporter technology has improved since, was it Daedalus, the episode Daedalus, when came over to do that teleport experiment, but they were still using shuttle pods and things like that afterwards, so having them to beam over, that definitely suggests teleporter technology has been advanced and so forth and so on.
Again, well, if you are to invade other planets and other spaceships, I mean, if you arrive with shuttles, then gives your enemy lots of time to react.
Definitely.
Whether if you just beam inside their ship or on the planet, and you have an advantage, maybe an element of surprise.
Yeah, so I think they certainly advance their transporter technology.
Yeah.
In the Mirror Universe for this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On Enterprise, a sedative that Phlox has been using on the Tholian pilot stops working and the alien begins retransmitting its bodily distress signal. After the signal is detected on the bridge, Forrest contacts Phlox, ordering him to kill the Tholian. Doing so takes time, and Phlox becomes impatiently frustrated. He eventually succeeds in destroying the Tholian, but its communication has attracted the attention of 3 Tholian vessels that approach Enterprise and start to hail the ship.
Made a bit of a mess, didn't it?
Yeah.
He did. The Phlox saying, would you kindly die?
Yeah.
I was a bit disappointed that the decon unit wasn't sealed to the point of preventing that signal from going out, whether it was radio or sound waves, whatever it was, that I don't know. I expect it to be better isolated than that.
Yeah, but its purpose is to protect the people from inside the ship getting, you know, sick or getting a virus or something like that. I don't know if that includes electromagnetic.
Well, it does now.
Yeah. The assault team, meanwhile, arrive on the Defiance darkened bridge. They find only 2 deceased officers there, one of whom is a man wearing a Command Division uniform. Archer assumes he is the captain, and Tipo reports that he has a broken neck. With Archer's approval, Tucker begins attempting to repower the vessel. That's consistent with what happened in the original series episode. They arrive on the Defiant, and they find the captain with a broken neck too. So and the uniform was spot on. I mean, they did a great job at recreating the original series
set. It was really good. They must have really looked at that episode and positioned everybody and everything in the same positions, which was, you know, uncanny.
Four more Tholian ships approach Enterprise, and despite an initial attempt by Forrest to withdraw from the mission, the alien vessels are not only jamming communications, but also subsequently create an energy web that surrounds Enterprise. Forrest first tries to fire on the ship's weaponry through the web, and then maneuver out of it, but neither method succeeds. Enterprise is trapped in one of those famous Tholian web. Same as the one in the original series, I guess.
Yeah, but these ones really sort of like appeared really quickly. One in the original series, you know, it took them hours to produce the web between two ships. And yeah, they had made no time at all making this one to surround the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the first time I've seen anything like this, having not seen, you know, anything to do with the Tholians before. I don't know. Didn't look right.
Well, I mean, that's the end of the episode. They had to move quickly.
Yeah, I suppose.
Tucker's eventual restoration of power to the Defiance system enabled Tipol to monitor Enterprise's situation. Moments later, Forrest orders the crew to abandon ship, but, much to Oshi's concern, he chooses to stay behind in the hope that he might be able to buy the survivors more time. Archer orders that the Defiance weapons and engine systems are brought back online, and, with the help of Mayweather and Reed, he starts to remove the two dead officers from their positions in front of their command chair. Enterprise, meanwhile, launches its complement of escape pods, but many are instantly destroyed. Forrest holds on to the helm. Forrest holds on to the helm of his dying ship moments before the assault team watch through the Defiance view screen as the Enterprise explodes.
What is it about warp core breaches always taking 3 minutes? I mean, again, as you so rightly said, it's a random number, and they report that the engine was going to breach because they couldn't eject the antimatter, could they? That was something Forrest went down to engineer, well, called into engineering to say in that scene.
Yeah, and that's the end of this episode. So yeah, I thought it was a great episode. As I said, it's not at all the character we're used to, but it was very clearly and very well introduced, and I had absolutely no problem, you know, suspending the Prime universe and getting into this story. And the fact that it links an episode of the original series, well, I was going to say it also links an episode from Discovery. It's the other way around. Discovery links that, but the fact that we've seen Discovery and it's all the same story, it's nice. And as we just said, it did a great job recreating the set of the Tholian web. I really enjoyed this one, and I'm really looking forward for next week. Not next week, because we're not going to be there next week, but next episode.
Yes.
To see what's going to happen. So we now know there won't be any Enterprise. So what are they going to do with the Defiant?
They'll just rebrand it, paint new words on. I think from my perspective, I mean, I'm not a stranger to the Mirror Universe, because I saw it in Discovery. But in Discovery, even though we were in the Mirror Universe, the Prime crew was there. So you had that continuation, that continuity. But not having had exposure to the Defiant, to any of the episodes that have kind of interlinked with this episode. I think I probably missed a lot of the point with this particular episode because I missed a lot of the references, which is entirely my fault.
I think you needed to see the Tholian web to have some idea of what the Defiant, why the Defiant was there and what it could mean for the Mirror Universe if ever it got... you never knew with the Tholian web that it was the Mirror Universe that the Defiant had dropped into. There was no indication of that at all. And the episode Mirror, Mirror was in the second season, and I think Tholian Web was first. I'd have to...
Yeah, so Tholian Web was first season.
Yeah, so I think Mirror, Mirror was second season. So that I don't even think that the Mirror Universe was even being thought about when the Tholian Web first came out. It just seems coincidental that they've managed to stitch all the slot together and make a real nice, good, compelling story.
Yeah, Mirror, Mirror was episode 10 of the second season of the original series. And the Tholian Web was, I think, episode 10 of the first season? Nine.
So we did meet the Defiant briefly in Discovery.
Yes, they talked about it. I don't know if we... Did we see it?
I'd have to review it. I think I've only ever seen that episode once. So I would have to rewatch that again.
Oh, no, the Tholian Web was season 3 of the original series.
Season 3?
It was after Mirror Mirror.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I stand corrected then. Maybe they had thought about it and maybe it was going to be something later on.
Yeah, they thought, hey, we're going to do this episode and in 15 years we're going to do a sequel. Well, 15 maybe. Years, what am I saying 15 years? 30 years.
Yeah,
30 years.
30 years on.
But the way that they've managed to intertwine this storyline into multiple episodes across multiple years, the Defiant, they've managed to get into three distinct series in the same plot because they're all seeing the Defiant in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
It's all that one particular moment in time.
And the Mirror Universe, of course, has been in four different franchises.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely loving the way this episode is going, the way this arc is going. I haven't seen the second part of this yet. But, yeah, like I say, as a standalone, someone coming in from the outside, it's a standalone episode. It's really, really good. But having sat here and, to be fair, not really contributed much towards this episode at all because I've missed a lot of the references that you've been referring to, I do feel like I've missed something. By not having that knowledge of the Mirror Universe previously, the Defiant, the Tholian race, and the Tholian web. So, yeah, a bit disappointing in that respect. But from a standalone perspective, as someone coming in from the outside, yeah, brilliant episode. Can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, because when I saw, you know, the name of the Defiant on the ship, it was like, oh, that's what it is. And probably something you missed because you didn't know.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. That bit where they zoom in and it says, USS Defiant on it is sort of...
Well, before you see that, you can see the Constitution ship. So I was like, well, is that the Enterprise or what's that? Mm. And then, oh, it's the Defiant, of course. Yeah. So, yeah. Also, great job from the actors to be able to switch. That's kind of what happened in the Observer Effect. So they were able to completely play new characters, new characters, and they were credible, all of them,
totally.
So kudos to them.
Must have been fun to do these episodes.
Yeah, I mean, Porthos's prosthetics were brilliant.
Small part.
Does that mean he didn't get paid for those, those two episodes?
No, maybe not. He spoke.
He did.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah. No, but so. I mean, our Porthos didn't get paid.
No, I don't think
even though they used his name.
Yeah, but it's just the character's name, so I don't think he's got the... He's getting better every time.
Porthos' voice we heard in this episode, which they maybe processed it slightly.
Maybe they put some makeup on Porthos to make him
hell
look
of a lot
like
of makeup.
This.
Really, yeah. Really thick makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, if you don't have anything to add to this, I guess that concludes our review of Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 18, In a Mirror Darkly, Part 1.
I do love the Mirror Universe, and it makes, I mean, my hypothesis about why it wasn't in TNG is that if you look at the episodes in DS9, you see that the Terran Empire is no more. It's now the Klingon Cardassian Alliance in the Mirror Universe, which is the dominant power, and Terrans are, the whole Terran Empire is gone. So during TNG, they must have quelled the rebellion that was happening between the Vulcans and the Andorians and the Tellarites were rebels, I think, in this. They must have quelled that, and then the Klingons must have just come in and brutalized the Empire at that point, with the help of the Cardassians, I expect, towards the end. I mean, again, this is all hypothesis. I'm sure there's stuff in the mirror, in Memory Alpha that people have surmised and hypothesized over it. But yeah, it's interesting. I do like the Mirror Universe as a whole.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting and interesting that they're actually evolved the Mirror Universe. As you said, in Deep Space Nine, it's not the Terran Empire who is that is the main power in the universe, in the Mirror Universe. So it's not just, you know, they could easily have made the Mirror Universe parallel to the Prime Universe and have an episode of Deep Space Nine where there's another Deep Space Nine in the Mirror Universe with the Terran Empire. But no, they chose to change it. So it, at this point, we can see that it diverged from the Prime Universe. And so if they bring that Mirror Universe back in future series, I don't know, maybe in Picard or Section 31 or whatever series that we're going to have. Well, not Section 31 would probably be before Deep Space Nine. So yeah, in Picard or maybe subsequent series, they can have very interesting stuff in there because we know it can evolve. So it can evolve. So yeah, I like this Mirror Universe too. Although the first time I've encountered the Mirror Universe in the original series, I was not quite sure. I didn't like it that much, but yeah. Now that we can see that it's coherent between all the series and everything like that, it's something that's really part of the Star Trek universe. It's not just, you know, one episode from here and there. It's not just something that is an easy way to create new stories. It's really an existence of itself.
Yeah, exactly. I feel it's got an existence of itself. I'm pretty sure that people are writing stories for it.
Star Trek Mirror Universe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if I ever thought about writing a book, I think I might sort of try my hand at it myself. Yeah, it definitely seems to be sort of course, similarities in the Prime timeline, but Prime universe, I should say, not timeline. But the timelines seem to work together as well. So, yeah, it's really super interesting. And you should watch The Folian Web, Dave. Yeah. That's a great episode.
You say that's in season 3?
season 3, episode 9.
Is it worth me jumping ahead? Because I'm slowly, really slowly, working my way through season 1 at the moment.
Yeah, I think you can.
Yeah. Okay.
There's nothing really...
Right, I'll do that as the next one I do then.
You might want to watch Mirror Mirror first.
Right. So write me down a list of episodes I need to see about this and I'll start working through them.
Mirror Mirror, Tholian Web. Those are the two important ones for this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I guess
these are the two important ones.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick a bunch of links into the show notes about the Mirror Universe because there are, I found three so far, two of them are quite lengthy, articles about the Mirror Universe. The main one is huge, going in about where the Mirror Universe has been referenced, but also where there's a theory about where the Mirror Universe came from, if there was a point of crossover between the Prime Universe and the Mirror Universe. And the theory kind of suggests that it's actually it's a quantum universe rather than a diverged one.
So completely separate.
Yeah. So if that is the case, then I suppose it's a whole new topic of discussion to try and understand actually what the relationship is between the two universes. But yeah. I'm gonna do some homework. I'm actually gonna read this at least twice before the next time we sit down and record.
Yeah, pun them to me. I would like to have a read of those.
Yeah. So
you have 2 weeks to get ready.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, very. And to come back on your point, should you watch something else? I find that episode with the Mirror Universe, except the Discovery one, tend to be standalone stories because in those episodes, the stories actually centered around the fact that it's the Mirror Universe and it does not often link with the previous things that happen in the series, except of course in Discovery, because the fact that they are talking about they are in the Mirror Universe because the problem in a jump, I think I remember.
That's right.
And so they're looking for a way back.
Yeah, so it's Lorca looking for a way back, isn't it? Yeah.
We kind of need to know what Discovery is, where it comes from, etc. But in the other series, it's not really necessary to have watched everything else. Just have a general idea about what the series is and who are the characters.
Well, in the Mirror Universe article, it actually shows you the 14 episodes where the Mirror Universe was encountered. So the 5 we know of in Discovery, the 2 in Enterprise, the 2 in the original series, and 5 distinctly standalone episodes within DS9. Because there's one in season 2, one in 3, one in 4, one in 6, one in 7. So they may not be as much value to me, but if you're saying that those two from the original series are going to be of benefit to me, then I'll make a point of getting those watched.
Yeah, I think they could bring background material for next episode of our show.
Have you watched Arena yet, Dave?
Arena?
Yeah.
What's that one?
It's a original series episode.
That's episode 9. Well, it's the production episode 19. I don't know when it was released. It was the 18th released. So, no, I haven't. I'm not that far ahead. I think I'm on broadcast episode 6.
Okay.
Whatever that was.
First season episode 18, production episode 19, Arena. There's something in Arena that's poignant for the next episode.
Oh, actually, I'm not that far ahead. Oh, it's because I watched The Cage first.
Yeah, which you should have.
So I've watched The Cage, I've watched The Man Trap. I literally watched Charlie X yesterday. So Arena, yeah, that's a little bit far down the line.
Yeah. We're making fun of Voyager's Lizard, but the Gorn was... it was... kind of, yeah, but I guess
it's spoilers
for the time.
Spoilers, Yannick.
Yes.
Dave hasn't seen the next episode. Shush.
Aired in 1967, remastered in 2006. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to shut up now. But yeah.
But yeah, it is an entire sorry. It's an entire universe in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
So for as many episodes that have been created in the Prime universe, you could argue there are as many, if not more, opportunities for episodes to be created, not necessarily from the same storylines, in the Mirror Universe as well.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, there isn't anything about the decline of the Terran Empire and the rise of the Klingon-Cardassian Alliance. I mean, there's a little bit in DS9 about how it happened, and say, oh yeah, Terran Empire destroyed, but there isn't any sort of story anywhere about it. You know, how the Defiant benefited the Mirror Universe, Terran Empire, and things like that, and how ultimately they fell. But, you know, empires fall. That's the whole premise of it.
So, Mr. Kurtzman, if you're listening to this show and you have some time on your hand, please give us a Star Trek Mirror Universe series. I mean, it seems to be running every show at the moment. So, I mean, he's got Discovery, he's got Picard, he's got probably Section 31, as we saw last week. I mean, what's another show?
See, if they were going to create a new series or a new concept based around the Mirror Universe, they should call it Kurtrats.
Kurtrats?
Kurtrats.
Star Trek backwards.
Ah.
Well done, Dave. Yes.
Clever.
I literally just worked that one out for myself.
Clever.
Wasn't clever at all.
I mean, I said to myself when these two episodes came out that they should make a series or at least a season of Mirror Universe ones.
Yeah.
Because I thought that might have been the way that season 5 might have gone.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
They have, I mean, of course, rounded season 4 off nicely, and you'll get to it, obviously, Dave. But yeah, it would have been nice to have a spin-off season, which was just Mirror Universe. That would have been great.
Yeah, I agree.
They still could. Like I say, there's a lot of opportunity there. And it certainly seems as though that the showrunners and the scriptwriters have an appetite for continuing to explore the Mirror Universe, considering that the last two series have created arcs out of them. So there's got to be something there. They've gone through a lot of effort to try and maintain the integrity of the instances in the earlier series.
And don't forget that we've got Giorgio in the Prime Universe that who comes from the Mirror
From the Mirror Universe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So maybe if they... Because if before they started talking about doing a spin-off for Section 31, there was, I believe, mutterings of doing a spin-off featuring Giorgio herself rather than Section 31. Now, clearly nothing's been said about that since, so it probably isn't going to go anywhere. But I think if they were considering doing something like that now that wasn't Section 31-centric, then that could be a good starting point, bearing in mind that we have her now. She's a Mirror Universe. She's a Terran subject. You can't really call her an Empress anymore because the Empire's not on this side of the fence. But... There's an opening there.
Well, yeah. If they can manage to have Giorgio in season 3 of Discovery far into the future and also in Section 31, because she's supposed to be in the Section 31 series, which we don't know how they're going to pull that off.
How are they going to play that? Because it's believed that Reed was part of Section 31.
He was.
Well, as he was.
He was part of Section 31 before he joined Enterprise.
Yeah, so Section 31 exists now, obviously. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't have Giorgio be the form Section 31. which was a thought that some people had.
No. But you said earlier in the week, Yannick, that she was confirmed to be on Discovery.
Yes.
The end of season two.
I watched the end of the episode just for that purpose.
Right.
And she was in engineering on Discovery when they crossed the wormhole. So she is in the future.
So in the principal timeline, which was in the 23rd century, Giorgio no longer existed.
No.
Because she was shot forward, best part of a millennium.
Yeah, so she can't be in Section 31
She can't be in Section 31 as it exists here.
Yet she's confirmed.
Yeah, exactly. But yet she is confirmed. The only thing I can think of, and this is pure conjecture, is that something, someone, some group end up following Discovery to where they are now in the 33rd century.
31st, isn't it? They jumped 800 years forward.
It's 950.
Right.
So there'll be... It was 2360-something. No, it wasn't. It was 2350-something. So it'd be right at the beginning of the 34th century. Oh, I don't know.
Century is math.
Quite a bit in the future. But yeah. if there is either a way to get somebody from the 23rd century to move forward, or if in fact we don't know that as part of season three, Discovery may end up coming back. I can't see that because Discovery never existed in the original series timeline going forward. Which, if Pike's directive that everybody essentially makes an effort to forget about it because it never happened and nobody ever speaks about it, then it wouldn't make sense for the Discovery to come back. But there's nothing to stop something from this timeline going forward to be with Discovery, and that could be an entity, whoever that may be, from Section 31 in the 23rd century. And it now exists within the 33rd. I don't know. It's very out there.
It doesn't need to be someone from now jumping into the future. Maybe Section 31 still exists in the 30-something century. And then Giorgio is just, part of it because she's Section 31 now. So
it's a possibility, although I'd like to see her explain it.
Or she can just, create Section 31 in the 31st century.
Potentially.
There's lots of possibility.
But if what happens if the Federation in there isn't there at that time, there would not be a Section 31 of the Federation, should.
Section 31 was Starfleet, not Federation.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
So, but I mean, it's less likely that Starfleet exists, to be honest. Because it's one entity, whereas Federation was Federation.
Yeah.
Yeah, be interesting to see how it does.
Yeah, I really look forward to season three of Discovery.
I just want to know where they're going with it, because...
Yeah.
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 I did catch up with the shorts that you mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I found them on Netflix, and there's a couple of good ones. There are a couple of good ones there. Yeah, well worth checking out.
If you like Discovery, I discovered that Netflix now has After Trek, which is a apparently something that is aired after the episode with the actors and the directors and everything. So it's the whole first season. So they go over, they do reviews of the episode, and it's all the episodes from season one of Discovery. So I yet have to watch that, but I discovered that yesterday. Was that when I posted the link? I think. Interesting stuff. Hopefully they're going to have season two soon.
It's always good to have these commentary review things afterwards. I mean, you found that they did that with Game of Thrones, and they've done it with a number of other shows as well. It's great to see, how... the writers came to these conclusions, or, how the story arc evolved over the time. It's always great.
Yeah, often you realize that what you thought was is not at all what they intended. But that's nice. You know, everybody can think of what happened and what's going to happen, and then confront their ideas. And sometimes the writers and the producers have an idea, and the audience have a completely different idea, and it fits. And then maybe they can, you know, just go on with what the audience thought and not what they initially thought. That's great. That's the power of television and movies.
Mm. So Discovery has shot into the 32nd century, and apparently we have a date of 3187 is where it's gone to. That's 930 years.
930.
From, yeah. So the 950 is Dr. Burnham. When she kept being pulled back to that point in time, that was 950 years ahead from 2236. But according to Memory Alpha, Discovery went from 2257 to 3187, which is 930 years. Now, interestingly enough, looking at the 32nd century, Daniels is mentioned.
Oh,
I was thinking about what was going to happen with Daniels because of all this time traveling business.
So,
it's
only mentioned in one of his own logs that a dorsal carrier was commissioned in 3125, and that's the only reference there is. Doesn't say that Daniels necessarily. No. Suppose it could mean that Daniels actually went there, but it's, you know, 50 years prior to where Discovery is, so it's possible that we could see evidence of this in season 3 of Discovery.
They're going to have to use another actor, I guess, because the actor that plays Daniels probably aged since he appeared on Enterprise, and for a time traveler it wouldn't make
a lot of sense. Oh, I'm pretty sure.
I see what you mean, because it's 15 years ago since he filmed it, you mean.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Sorry, I thought you were trying to say that he would have aged in the show, but when you think about it, he can kind of go wherever he wants to. Sorry, whenever he wants to.
So interesting stuff, and interesting possibilities for the future.
Definitely.
So I'm now
all good fun.
Eager to discover Picard and Discovery and Section 31.
And Pike.
And Pike, yeah, if they could have that. Ooh. Star Trek, well, they have to have either short seasons or very, very interesting seasons so that we can actually make more episodes of this podcast and review everything. So if there's like 4 series at the same time, 24 episodes of each, we're going to have a lot of work.
I quite like the fact that Discovery was only... Was it 14-15 episodes per season? Yeah. I'm even more liking the fact that Picard will just be 10 initially.
Yeah.
Because I think if you over-egg it, I mean, just look, if, and I know this won't happen, but if Picard turns out to be a complete turkey, we don't want to have to run through 24, I think it was, episodes in season 3 of Enterprise. No, trudging through thinking I've got to get to the end of this because I want to see what comes after it. So I think the idea of having shorter seasons, because they're not tied into the US broadcast schedules anymore because they're doing everything on CBS. Mm-hmm. So they've got the freedom to do essentially whatever broadcast and release schedule they want to. So I think 10 episodes is a good number.
It's quite surprising. You look at The Mandalorian, I know it's Star Wars, but is only 8 episodes for a season. The shows which they're playing on Apple TV Plus are only 8 episodes. So maybe the Americans are starting to see this thing where they're having more intense episodes with sort of more packed in episodes rather than trying to draw it all out. So it seems to be sort of like 8 to 12 seems to be the norm now for TV series out there.
Yeah, and I guess you can have a long story spread over 8 to 12 episodes, which is a huge story arc, but it's the same story. You avoid the audience getting bored. You always have the you know, the new shiny effect. That it's 10 episodes, past 10 episodes, it starts, you know, I guess you start losing audience because it's no longer a new thing, and I guess people are getting bored. So yeah, it's a good way to do that. And also starting and saying, okay, we're going to have 10 episodes in the first season, it prevents what happened with a lot of series, which is, okay, let's plan for 24. So let's plan the evolution of the characters on 20 something episodes, and that get cancelled after 10 and leave the everything hanging. Exactly. Because you didn't plan for an
exit.
That's
the worst thing to happen.
Yeah. So planning for 10, let's say between 8 and 12, then you can shut everything without, you know, having to rely on screening and ratings and things like that to guess, are we going to go forward or not? You shoot 10 episodes and you show them, and if it doesn't work, well, it doesn't work. You don't renew the series, and that's all, and everything.
But if it does, then you have a season two.
Yeah, if it does, yeah.
Character development is very quick. Everybody accepts characters very quickly now. I mean, even on films, character development and who a person is usually completely accepted and taken as read within the first 15 minutes of a film. You know who's who and whatever in a film really, really very quickly. In a TV show, yes, that can stretch over a few episodes, but yeah, character development and, well, not necessarily development, but who they are as a core character can happen very quickly. And of course, everybody knows who Picard is. Yeah. No, you don't need to expand his character development because he's a very developed character in him already.
I disagree, because a lot has happened in the past between the point in time where we stopped knowing Picard to where he is now. So we don't know what's happened in that intervening time. So there will be, I think, quite a bit of character building on the gap in the timeline that we don't know about.
I get you. I certainly get you that there is this time gap, but I don't think the character necessarily is going to collapse on himself, and his own moral judgment and things like that is going to be deterred. Picard is still going to be Picard. He's not going to be a completely different character.
No, I agree with that. But it's interesting what you're saying about the difference between films and TV series. When I'm watching a TV series, I actually really enjoy the time that's spent in building up characters, because, well, for no other reason is that you have the luxury of doing that. But most films nowadays, they tend not to be any more than the length of two standard television episodes anyway, particularly the 45, 50 minute episodes. Two of those in one place, like In a Mirror Darkly, you could release that as a feature film quite easily.
Yeah, true. But you are kind of relying in The Mirror Darkly to have some kind of, not necessarily a relationship, or have some kind of, of course, you're invested in the characters in the prime universe. You know, you've spent 3.5 years at this point watching them character develop and relationships and things like that, and then you're thrown into these two episodes, and they are in effect completely different characters, but they're still in the back of your head the same characters. They still have ever so slight similarities.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Archer definitely has his drive and his focus. He still doesn't like Vulcans. So, you know, and things like that. And, you know, I think Hoshi's very different. Hoshi, I think, is she's a very open character in this, and she's a very open character in the Prime universe. But I'm not going to give you spoilers, Dave. You're going to have to watch the next episode.
No, that's fine. I mean, maybe In a Mirror Darkly wasn't a very good example, but pick any two two-episode arc.
But yeah, you're already invested in the characters in the Prime line.
Yes.
You are kind of semi-invested in the characters in A Mirror Darkly. You can see parallels in the characters. Even just minutely, except for Phlox, maybe. I mean, Phlox is a completely different character.
There's no correlation.
There's no similarity.
No normal whatsoever.
No. But with most of the others, there are some tiny similarities which you kind of grip onto in The Mirror Darkly. And you find that with any Mirror episodes, with any of the characters, including the ones in DS9. You know, you kind of like Smiley because he's a happy-go-lucky Irishman, which is exactly what Miles O'Brien is in the Prime universe. He is kind of, he's happy and he is lucky in some instances. So yeah, you have that affinity and you still have that kind of affinity even in mirror episodes.
Just very quickly before we end this section, so
see Yannick really chomping 2 hours. A bit there.
Going back to the discussion we're having about series lengths, and you know, commissioning a 24 episode series, only to find out that it doesn't end up finishing. Just looking at how Discovery did it, season one only had 9 episodes to start with. And they ordered a further 6. But at the point where they left episode 9, which could potentially have been an open-ended cliffhanger, was the point where they had just carried out an incomplete jump and found themselves in the Mirror Universe. That was the cliffhanger at the end of episode 9. And then the following 4 episodes in the second part of season 1 were the ones where we were in the Mirror episode, the Mirror Universe, with the ISS Discovery, the fake ISS Discovery. Sorry, spoilers if no one's seen it yet. But just if you imagine that, had they decided that was going to be the end of season 1, but they would renew for season 2, that would have been a perfect place to stop the season. But if they'd cancelled it, that would have peed off a lot of people. So the danger there of going through a storyline and making a plan of where it's going to be before you know whether the season's going to be extended or if indeed there's going to be a further season is a risk, isn't it? It's a risk that every TV show takes. The number of TV shows, seasons I've watched, where they've come to the end, they've cancelled it, and they've ended it completely open-ended. And no one knows what's happening. And you'll never know because they're not making any more of them. So it's always a risk. I'm going to shut up now.
Yeah, well, we were worried what we were going to discuss and if we were going to have a long enough episode. Well, guess what? We do. We've passed the 2-hour mark on the recording, so yeah. Shall we conclude then?
Yes, I think so. Why not?
Thanks, everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. You can help us make the world aware of our existence by inserting a card with the name of the show in every present you will offer for Christmas. Or if that's easier for you, just share the address of our website on various social media.
Not only is that our website, best one so far, that is also incredibly seasonal, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well,
that's brilliant. Yeah, I'm going to have to do that.
I do work to prepare those.
I know you do. You come up with new ones each time, and it's
yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Well, keep them coming. We've got lots of episodes to go yet. You can find our website over at teearlgreyhot.org. And on there, you've got all of our previous episodes, the reviews that have been posted by, well, whoever did the review that week, and also full details on how you can get in contact with us, including the following.
And before the following, there's also an outdated outdated page with all the answers of to our quickfire question that I will, I promise I will one day update.
Which is why I didn't mention it.
So you can contact us by sending us an email at feedback@trgreyhot.org.
You can also find us on various social networks. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Telegram. Our username there is TEGH Podcast.
We are also on Mastodon, on the mastodon.social instance, and we are at TEGH Podcast.
Thanks, as always, to Memory Alpha. We have taken the review of this episode from their wiki page, and that is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of this show, unless otherwise stated, is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you publish something based on this episode, you have to release it under the same license.
This podcast is also a part of the Other Side Podcast Network. You can find more of our phenomenally good shows over at otherside.network.
And there will be no episode next week because it's Christmas week and, well, we're taking a one-week break, which means that the Voyager extravaganza review of Threshold will have to be pushed back because we kind of added that between Enterprise and Picard. And, well, since we're not doing an episode next week, we're going to have to push this review of Threshold to, well, after Picard. So that's going to be probably in March, April.
At the moment, it's looking at to be somewhere around the second week of April.
So April. Hopefully, Discovery will start a little bit later and not just after Picard. So, well, we will keep you posted on the date of this phenomenal event that will be the review of Threshold and the Lizards.
Indeed. So our next episode will be a review of Enterprise Season 4, Episode 19, In a Mirror Darkly, Part 2. And I do believe we will have a special guest for that one.
We will.
We will. Wow. Yes. We can't tell you who it is because it's going to be Ro. Of course it's going to be Ro.
Yes. Yes, we will do it.
Ro's going to join us in 2 weeks for to cover off the second part of this this arc. Because of Ro's keenness to take part in this particular episode, it really does make sense for him to help us complete the arc in its entirety. So yes, so the next episode, it will be in the new year, but we will complete the arc then, which will be great.
Absolutely. Yeah,
great stuff.
So thank you, Ro, actually, for joining us tonight. Where can people find more about you?
Me, you can find me at darkcompass.com. I'm over on Twitter at Dark Compass, and I'm on Mastodon, mastodon.social, and at R0C.
We will put all those links in the show notes, of course.
I think it's probably the right time to wish all of our listeners a Merry Christmas or a Happy Festive Season, however you celebrate with friends and family. I just hope it's a great time for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas, Ro. See you next year, then.
Yes.
Indeed.
And have fun. I'll see you next year.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks, everybody, for listening to our show. We will catch you next year. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.